And again, welcome back live here from Immers E-Day in Rotterdam. And again, you online viewers, you are lucky bastards, because again, we've got a keynote that didn't even perform.
Again.
You're the first one. So in any minute, they start screaming in the big audience thing over there, but they have to wait until we're finished. So neglect all the rumor around us and concentrate on this conversation. My next guest is weird. Or just different. Ladies and gentlemen, businessman, clown, musician, and, so I just heard, a homeless guy. Ladies and gentlemen, Derek Cyphers. Derek, welcome at my table.
Thank you.
You're homeless, right?
I'm homeless.
Damn. What I read was that you had CD Baby, you know, that was a company, you sold it successfully, so you made a couple of millions, maybe a lot of millions. How much? Millions?
Yeah, something like that.
With one or two figures.
In euros or pounds?
Yeah. Dollars?
A couple, yeah.
Oh, damn. And now you're homeless.
Yeah.
How come?
I think a lot of people get stuck somewhere, and then they forget that they could be somewhere else. So my wife and I just hit this point where we were both working on our laptops, sitting in New York City, but everything we were doing is on our laptops. We just said, it's a big world out there. Let's go. So got rid of our only home and
sold your children.
Yeah, sold the children. Yeah, they were not profitable. We spent a month each in Amsterdam, Stockholm, Singapore, and we're going to China for a couple months and then moving to Singapore at the end of the year.
Wow.
So new home.
Perfect. I told you this is the interview I prepared less because what I did, I read about you and I did my perfect research, of course. And then I came to your ugly website, but full of content, and there it stated, Derek in 10 seconds. Mm-hmm. And there were about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 9 or 10 bullets.
30 seconds each.
Yeah, and if we don't make it, then we stop when the 10 minutes are over, or somebody starts screaming or waving, and then we stop, or we don't stop, or whatever. I'm an entrepreneur. I treat work as play. My question is then, can anybody do that?
Not these people.
Because you just told you do that. But can anybody do that?
Which is, it's the mindset that you go about things. Like, I can tell you've got a playful attitude towards life just from the way we're talking here. A lot of people get so serious about what they do. It's so adult, and it's very business.
Business is war.
Yeah, business is war. And the funny thing is, like, I kind of think of it like the Tao of business, that sometimes you can do better by trying less. It's sometimes the people that try so fucking hard, you know, you don't want to do business with them. They're no fun. It's like, yes, you might see an increase in numbers, but not in your life. So some people have more of a relaxed attitude towards business, which I think kind of makes it more fun to do business with them as a customer or as a client. And that's kind of my approach to things.
It's like, you know, if you want to fall in love, you don't. But if you don't want to fall in love, you fall in love.
Yeah, those people, you know, when they're dating, they're trying so hard to find a spouse.
And they won't.
It's creepy. Yeah. Some people in business are like that, especially this guy. Look at
that. He's already after me for the whole way. Be quiet. Second one. I'm usually learning how to help people. Why?
Okay, so...
Fuck them.
Well, no, I think that's what it all comes down to, right? Is, again, so... Like, some people in business, they look at how they can help their own bank accounts. And that seems to be the main reason they're doing anything.
That's why we have an economic crisis and everything goes broke.
You can even see it in the way that they design their business, where they make rules and policies that benefit them and screw the customer. But if you just flip it all around, if you keep your main focus on how to help other people, finding ways to be helpful, I think, then again, it benefits you in the end, but it keeps your focus in the right place.
And is that idealism or is it something else?
No, it's practical. I mean, I think that is why, I think it's always creepy when people talk about why they've been successful, but I think that from what people...
Why have you been successful?
Well, from what people have told me, that part of the reason they dealt with my company instead of the others they could have gone with is that everything we did stayed very focused on them. That we had rules and policies that were not about us at all. It was just whatever is best for them. Yeah. Don't worry about me. We'll be okay.
That was the reason you started it in the first place.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
To help out. Yeah. I live by whatever scares you, go do it.
Uh-huh.
Again, why?
Okay, so what he's talking
whatever
about is...
Whatever scares you, run away from.
No, I have this model that whenever something scares you, it's usually because it's a little out of your league. You know, whether you say above your head... over your head, out of your league.
Out of your
comfort
zone.
The person that is too good-looking for you to talk to, that seems like she's too good-looking for you, that's the one that you should be speaking with. The careers that seem like that they're a little too ambitious are the things you should be doing. I have this kind of life philosophy that you should stay in over your head a bit, because it's more exciting than sticking with what's comfortable. So I think starting when I was about 19, I heard that philosophy from somebody just saying, whatever scares you, go do it. And I went, damn, that's good. So ever since I was 19, I started just living by that, you know, based on, again, like really like the girls who I would talk to, the things I would choose to do. And sometimes it's even, you know, living in New York City, there's a social situation where there's an extremely famous person or a successful business person at the next table over from you, and what scares you is to get up and talk to them, and that's exactly what you should be doing. Like, whatever scares you, go do it.
And what scares you most until now? What scares you most?
Look back? Until now? God, everything. Well, right now what scares me is moving to China, which is why we're moving to China for 2 months. But right now China scares me, so I'm going to China.
I have a very short time between thinking and doing. That sounds like a child.
Does it?
Yeah, they always do. They think and doing is the same thing.
Yeah, you're right.
It's childish.
I think it's kind of similar to the last one, that if you have an idea and you're thinking I should do it...
Because adults say you must first think before you do.
Carefully consider things.
Yeah.
Now, I think that, again, it's kind of this impulsive idea of whatever's on your mind, before you can get too worked up about it, you just do it. You know, so whether it's life things or just little moment by moment, who you speak to kind of things.
Just do it.
Yeah,
kind of.
Yeah.
We're going to finish them all. You mind?
Hey, let's go.
Nobody's waiting,
we got
right?
time. Yeah, nobody cares.
I'm very comfortable being the leader and being on stage. Okay, then we have to make the bridge. So what you're going to do on stage today?
What am I going to do?
Yeah.
I'm going to talk about some really boring stuff.
Damn.
I'm going to talk about profit, which is, it's funny because it's very, see, you're laughing because it's so boring. But you know, all these other people are speaking about big ambiguous social media. Hey man, what's social media? It's a cat and I'm a bird, you know. So I thought it would be more interesting to talk about something specific and useful.
And that's profit.
Yeah. The creativity, the art of profitability, the creative side of profitability.
What is the creative side of profitability?
Well, that there's so many different ways to be profitable. So many companies kind of, they're very profitable.
Do you mean it's not only money you're talking about then?
The creative ways to get money. Some people are creative in the design of their business, but then they think of profit as just advertising. And so that's not a creative way of looking at profit. So I kind of encourage people to carry their creativity into the very profit model itself, and I give some examples.
How much time you have?
30 minutes.
Okay. This is my favorite fable. We're not going to do the whole fable. What's
punchline of the fable?
Exactly.
The fable in 30 seconds.
They can find them on your website. So Google the guy and then.
Oh, okay. It's just that the big idea is that people kind of say that something is terrible or something is wonderful. You know, like say you get fired from your job and they go, God, that's terrible, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, we'll see.
Or then you get a job and they say, oh, that's congratulations, that's amazing. So my favorite fable, just no matter what happens, you just say, we'll see. It means that you never know what's bad or good. Actually, nothing is necessarily bad or good because it all depends what happens after.
We are becoming philosophical now. We're like, it's incredible. I'm a minimalist. The less I own, the happier I am. Well, you're homeless already.
Yeah.
So
strike one.
Is it difficult in such a material world we're living in?
It's rebellious, isn't it? You know,
it's like the old hippies.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like peace.
The part that we didn't say earlier when you said that I'm homeless is everything I own right now fits into one suitcase.
Really?
Everything. I love that.
And the rest is on the bank.
Yeah, exactly. doesn't take up any space. But I got rid of my car, my place, my furniture. And everything we own fits into one suitcase. And
how does that feel?
I love it. It's freedom, isn't it? It's so many people are kind of tied down by what they own. They can't move because it would be so hard to move. But when you don't own anything, you feel very free. It's wonderful.
Is it different when... Do you have children?
No, we don't yet.
Do you want to have children?
Yeah, next year. Then it'll be a little different.
Yeah, it will be different.
Unless we teach them to be minimalist. Everything you own must fit into this little lunchbox.
And I'm your teacher.
Yeah.
Well, people do it. Yeah. One of my friends was for more than a year in Spain, and he taught his children. He was cool for himself for 1 year, so he quit school and went to Spain. Was there for a year, and he taught things to the children. It's possible if you want it. Everything's possible. I never expect anyone to help me. That's contradictory with. So you stay. You are helping people all the time, but you never expect anyone to help me.
Yeah.
Why do you help them then if they don't help you?
Because other people expect others to help them. I don't. But I think that's also just a philosophy. I don't know if it's an American thing. I was actually really surprised later when I found out that other countries have grants and they actually give money to people. But I kind of grew up in a country where the government never gives you anything, ever. And it was, especially in the music business, I was kind of surprised when I went to Canada and the musicians in Canada were talking about getting a grant to make their next album. I was like, why would the government give you money to make an album? Like, do they give you money to write poetry? It's like, why would, you know? So I think it's just a mindset. A lot of people, their approach to their career is they're going to do something and hope that, you know, a fairy godmother comes along with their wand and...
It's like taking your own responsibilities. You make your own life.
Yeah.
That's what you, in fact,
yeah, exactly.
Your attitude.
But to me, that encourages me. Like, if somebody says, nobody's going to help you, you have to do everything yourself, it's kind of encouraging. It's like, yeah, fuck yeah, here we go. Whereas, to me, it's a kind of defeating mindset to do something but expect that, you know, only if American Idol, you know, you win an award will you be successful. I don't like that mindset.
The last. I like not knowing the future and challenging myself. That's not a surprise anymore for me, but do try to know the future for once. So can you describe... I like not knowing the future and challenging myself, but do... If we look at the future, try to describe it anyway.
No, I refuse. Okay. At a lot of... I'll tell you why, though. At a lot of conferences like this, they get a bunch of people up in a panel, and they say... you know, if somebody's in the business of selling MP3s, they'll say, what do you think is the future? And they'll say, the future is MP3s. It's selling MP3s is the future. And in the future, everybody will buy MP3s. And then if you interview somebody who's in the business of, say, internet radio, say, what's the future? They say, the future is internet radio. In the future, every, you know. And I think everybody's full of shit. They describe a future almost as if saying it enough will make it happen.
Self-fulfilling prophecy?
Yeah, a future that, well, they mean they hope it will.
It's opportunism.
They describe a future that would benefit them. So when I come to conferences like this, I kind of think everybody's full of shit and not to be trusted. So I don't trust anybody who says what the future is. I don't know why everybody's so scared to just say, I don't know, and admit that they don't know. So I don't know. I have no idea. No idea.
If this was not a normal interview, but I knew it was going to be a nice interview.
You're not a normal interviewer. I love this.
Thank you. If you guys want to know anything about Derek Sivers in the way of like companies and shit like that, then you just Google Derek Sivers.
And otherwise, I don't know.
Thank you very much for being my guest today. We'll keep in touch one way or another. Thank you.
Thanks, Ronnie.
And thanks for watching. Bye.